Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. A mass at St. Peter's and then down to work today for the Roman Catholic cardinals who will pick the church's next pope. Cloaked in red, voting in the Sistine Chapel at the Vatican for the leader of 1.2 billion Catholics who are well aware of deep issues in their church. This hour On Point, as we wait for the famous puff of white smoke, we'll look at the prayer and politics that go into picking the next pope. You can join the conversation. Catholics, what do you need? Everyone, what do you see in this ritual in Rome? Today in Vatican City, a choir during the procession of cardinals at the start of Mass for the election of a pope at St. Peter's Basilica. And on they went. Joining me first from Rome today is Rachel Donadio, Rome Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Rachel, welcome back to On Point. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Remind us of the basics. How many cardinals and what does it take in terms of their vote to find a pope?
115 elector cardinals under the age of 80. It takes a two-thirds majority to elect the next pope. So this afternoon when the cardinals enter the conclave, they're going to start horse trading, although they've kind of been doing that informally for the last 10 or 12 days.
Well, how does that work? They're in the Sistine Chapel. Let's look at the voting first of all. They're not raising hands. They're writing on slips of paper that they take to an altar. Am I right?
Exactly. They're writing things down on a piece of paper that then get put in, counted and put in little urns, and then those are burned in a little stove at the end of the balloting. Now, that's where we get the traditional white or black smoke. Today, for instance, we're expecting black smoke at the end of the conclave session, which will mean that they have not elected a pope. And when they have, there'll be a puff of white smoke. Now they use chemicals for that, but it used to be actually the burning of the ballots themselves on which they vote. It is they put down the name of the person that they want, and then someone counts that and reads it and records it. But it is it's a secretive procedure. Conclave means conclave. It means closed inside, locked in with a key. So these cardinals, as they start this afternoon, they're under even more heavy secrecy than usual for Vatican standards. And, we don't ever really know who ends up voting for whom. One cardinal published his diary from the conclave that elected Benedict in 2005. We don't know who that was, but a journalist reported that a few years ago, and you got a sense of how in the first ballot there were more votes for one person, and then in the second ballot others. They do several rounds of voting a day. It's a fairly complicated procedure.
Now, you're talking about locked in, but it's not as though they're sleeping on cots in the Sistine Chapel. If this takes more than one day, they make their way to a sort of a dormitory on the Vatican grounds.
Exactly. They moved into what's called the Doma Santa Marta, the House of St. Martha, which is inside the Vatican, and they each have rooms there. And then they walk to the Sistine Chapel or they're bused in a little minivan to the sessions. This afternoon there's a session, tomorrow morning, so we expect a puff of smoke at midday tomorrow, and then tomorrow afternoon, and this goes on and on. If they don't elect anybody by Friday, then they take a day-long break. Now, all of the people involved in the conclave and surroundings have taken this oath of secrecy. That includes the people who are cleaning the rooms at the Casa Santa Marta. It includes the person who drives the minivan. It includes the confessors and the confessionals at this residence where they're living. But really, once they're inside the room, it's just those cardinals in secrecy determining the course of the Roman Catholic Church. Now, in the conclave that elected Benedict, mm-hmm. that elected Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger in 2005, back then, there was a big question of whether there would be a kind of continuity with the papacy of John Paul II or whether they would bring in another figure who would take the church in a different direction. And then Ratzinger was seemed to be the guy who was most likely to keep things along the course they were going.
That is conservative with an eye towards centralizing power in the Vatican.
That's probably true. Also, a traditionalist when it comes to doctrine. I mean, John Paul was very much a traditionalist, but he had such a charismatic personality that one remembers the personality almost as much as the doctrine, and the way in which, after the liberalizing Second Vatican Council, power, you could argue, was centralized more in the Vatican and less with the bishops. Now, this conclave is fascinating. By fascinating, I mean we're all going to have egg on our face because we really have no idea who is going to emerge as the next pope. There are several front runners, but the field is pretty much wide open. The dividing line this time seems to be someone who wants to reform the Curia, that is the Vatican hierarchy, or someone who's maybe more of a Curia insider who maybe is a little bit more resistant to change. And the Curia is the Vatican, it's the Vatican hierarchy. I mean, we all know that the Vatican is in some ways a very Italian institution, even though it represents and works at the service of this global universal church. So there's a lot of tension there. I think a lot of Americans say the Italians are not running the Vatican well, and they want a candidate who can kind of have a, you know, better record on questions of governance.
Well, let's look at that. Remind us, I mean, in the Italian press, there is an enormous amount of scandal swirling around the Vatican Curia. Remind us of what that is and how seriously is that taken by these cardinals?
Well, there was something called the VatiLeaks scandal last year, where some of the Pope's private correspondence was leaked to the press and to a journalist who published it in a book. This might have happened in past years and centuries, but certainly in the age of tell-all journalism, this was kind of a remarkable thing, and it showed an amazing security breach. And even if that was maybe a Vatican insider, you know, very Italian scandal, what it showed is that Benedict did not have a grip on running the Vatican, and neither did his Secretary of State, Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone. So Bertone has many enemies in the Curia, and then he has some defenders, but some people say that the whole leak scandal, these leaks were strategically used in order to undermine Bertone by his enemies. You're never quite clear where the battle lines are drawn. Again, these battle lines are less ideological and more just, I would say, Machiavellian power plays. And so there's this idea that the next pope will really need to make the institution work for the church and not just be this kind of den of intrigue and scandal of all kinds.
Is the Italian press gone wild? I mean, or is it the rest of the world's press that's too... I don't know what, low-key in describing these. I mean, the Italian press is full of talk about laundering money for the mafia by the Vatican Bank, of gay sex circles in the Vatican, and blackmail and sex clubs and all the... Is that seen as... Do the cardinals say that that's ridiculous? Or is that exactly what is waiting the next pope in those Vatican documents, their own reports?
Well, I would just say two words to you, sourcing standards. The Italian press, I do not think, has the same sourcing standards that we have, and it's easy to use anonymous quotes. You know, this is alleged to have happened, that's alleged to have happened. That being said, there are a lot of money and power interests at stake, and there have been investigations in the Italian courts that have stumbled upon people, some of whom maybe had bank accounts or access to bank accounts at the Vatican Bank. Maybe the priest who allowed his name to be used was being a front for something. I mean, gay sex scandals, you read about that in the Italian press. It's something that, I don't think it's necessarily been proven, but it's easy to use anonymous quotes as a way to blackmail people. And I think that, it's something that it's a small internal Italian kind of scandal, but because it's happening obviously at the Vatican, connected to the Vatican, among people who know other people in the Vatican, then it obviously has a huge impact on perceptions of how the entire church is run.
It can hardly be entirely internal if it's at the leadership inner circle of a global church with a lot of 1.2 billion followers, many of whom don't want to see, presumably, that kind of talk at the top of their church. You talked about horse trading. What does that look like? Where does that stand? What are the blocks? And is there any sense of where the cardinals may be leaning?
Sure. Well, as for the scandals, we have to see what happens. I really just... Until something is proven, it's all hearsay. So it's kind of hard
Fair
to
enough.
Know who is involved and who isn't. As for the blocks, okay, so there are allegedly two front runners. One, Angelo Scola, Archbishop of Milan, doctrinal conservative, fairly opaque in the way he speaks, but also seen as pastoral and a good manager. he is supported by some of the Italians, but not all of the Italians. And he is seen as the outsider insider, that is, the Italian who is not part of the Vatican hierarchy, so he could conceivably come in and give it a fresh take. Cardinal Scherer of Sao Paulo, Brazil, who is of German origin but is Brazilian, and he is seen as the favorite of some of the members of the Vatican hierarchy. That is Cardinal Angelo Sodano, the Dean of the College of Cardinals, and Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re, who is the Emeritus Prefect of the Congregation of Bishops, so important figure in naming bishops. And they apparently are endorsing Scherer. If there's a short conclave, people say, if they choose the Pope on Wednesday, it's bound to be Scola because he will probably get the most votes quickly if they see that that's where the wind is blowing. But if they cannot settle on enough of a majority, then it'll take longer and it could be some wild, you know, dark horse candidates. There's even talk about Cardinal O'Malley of Boston being a contender, or Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York. I think some of the Italians would support Dolan, at least in the first round of voting, if he might not become Pope, because I think there's a question about whether an American, you know, someone from a global superpower can become Pope. Even if there isn't going to be an American Pope, the fact that they're discussing the possibility shows that I think there's a lot of will for some kind of breath of fresh air, something a little bit new among, you know, that the cardinals are looking for. Mm. But really what happens is if not enough votes coalesce around one person, then they're going to have to just keep voting until someone can kind of rally other troops around. It's pretty fluid process.
Rachel, we're going to dive right on in. We're very grateful to you for starting us off today. Thanks for joining us from Rome.
Thanks for having me.
Rachel Donadio, Rome Bureau Chief for the New York Times. We're talking about the conclave of cardinals in Rome choosing a new pope. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the conclave of cardinals in Rome choosing a new pope and what is at stake for the Catholic Church. They're the sound of a special mass today before the conclave in the Vatican. Are you watching all of this? Are you listening? Are you paying attention? Why? And Catholics, what's on the line for your global church here? Catholics and non-Catholics, what do you see in this ritual of selection, this pageantry and its politics? Stakes are big. Cardinals saying so themselves. Here's Cardinal Wilfred Napier of South Africa saying that the cardinals will take all the time necessary to select the right person.
This is a great historical moment, but we've got to do it properly, and I think that's why there isn't a real rush to get into things.
And it's not necessarily an easy environment for doing all this. Here was Cardinal Timothy Dolan, Archbishop of New York. This is on CBS Face the Nation on Sunday. Telling host Bob Schieffer that dealing with accusations of sex abuse and cover-ups and so on within the church will be a big issue when it comes to deciding the next pope.
There's no cardinal with his head in the sand when it comes to these issues. The church, of course, while it is not of the world, it does exist in the world. So it shouldn't surprise us that the afflictions of the world, and you've just named some of them, sexual immorality, perversion, abuse of children, that affects all elements of society and culture, are particularly hideous when it comes to the church. And that will be an issue, I predict it will.
Cardinal Timothy Dolan, his name is on the list of potential next popes in Rome, taking those straight on. And here, the sound of Cardinal Angelo Sodano, Dean of the College of Cardinals, praying with others before entering the conclave to choose a pope.
Confiteor Deo Omnipotenti et vobis fratres, quia peccabinimis cogitatione verbo opereto missione.
We're looking at the conclave in Rome, at the Vatican, and the task ahead of them this hour. You can join us, 800-423-8255. With us now from Rome is Dennis Codé, editor of the National Catholic Reporter. He's been on the ground in Rome covering the papal transition. Dennis Codé, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Glad to be with you.
It's great to have you here. Also with us from Rome is Father Thomas Rees, director of the Religion and Public Policy Program at the Woodstock Theological Center at Georgetown University, author of Inside the Vatican, also writing for the National Catholic Reporter. Father Tom Rees, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to be here.
And with us from South Bend, Indiana, is Kathleen Sproes Cummings, director of the Kushwaha Center for the Study of American Catholicism at the University of Notre Dame, author of New Women of the Old Faith. Professor Sproes Cummings, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Dennis Coday, first to you. We heard there from Rachel Donati of the New York Times, sort of the broad lay of the land. We've heard that some of the cardinals wanted, before they went ahead with this decision, to know more about some of the trouble within the central administration, the Curia at the Vatican. Have they been shown more of the investigations that the Vatican itself has ordered before the vote, or are they, as some of them, I think, complained, flying a little blind here?
Well, the what they reference is this 300-page dossier that was given to Pope Benedict back in December. That has been filed away in the papal apartments and will not be shown only to the new pope after he's elected. But the three cardinals who compiled that dossier were in the general congregations. Those are the meetings that they've been holding for the last more than a week that they've been meeting. And those cardinals were available to be questioned in the congregations and in those meetings and also in informal settings. And so they haven't seen the report, but they've had access to the source of that report.
Here's a little more from, this is Cardinal Wilfred Napier of South Africa talking with CBS yesterday, saying, look, you know, he wants to know what he's signing on to as he strides in here. Here's Cardinal Napier.
I'm one of those 15 cardinals that sits on that committee, and we sign our name to the report. I want to know that I'm signing something that is actually reflecting the truth.
Father Tom Rees, what about these cardinals as they're in Sistine Chapel right now and the tension over the Curia, the Vatican administration? Is that the central issue here? There's been an awful lot of talk about corruption and problems there.
Well, I think it's one of the issues. Certainly the cardinals are concerned. I mean, they've been reading about financial corruption. They've been reading about infights in the Vatican Curia. They've been, you know, hearing about documents stolen out of the Pope's apartment and even sexual things going on in the Vatican. All of this is, you know, they don't want to read this in their newspapers.
Yeah,
and they come
no doubt
to Rome and they tell the Vatican that they don't. And they'd like to see the new Pope clean this up, get this under control.
Well, let's look at the theological issues here. Kathleen Sproes Cummings, what do you see on the table there? Is there a debate over where the church should go theologically or in terms of some of the big doctrinal issues? These cardinals have all famously been chosen by Pope John Paul and Pope Benedict, two conservative popes. Does that mean that they are beyond the realm of debate over theology and doctrine in this choice or not, Kathleen?
Trinally, we're not going to see any kind of rapid change, or even that's really far down the agenda in terms of, I think what has to happen first is to demonstrate that the next leader has to demonstrate that he's willing to break with precedent in terms of creating a more open culture, a more transparent culture. I think a lot of the recent disconnect that polls are showing between young adult Catholics or Catholics in general and the church in Rome is really a reflection of American Catholics living in a culture that, you know, adapts very easily and rapidly to change, and an institution that changes very cautiously and slowly. So I think before we get to a debate over doctrine or a theological debate, there's a lot that could be done in order to recapture some of that connection with people who live, Americans who live in a very different culture.
So Dennis, if one of the big lines running through this conclave is about whether it's going to be an inside guy close to the Curia or an outside guy who might come in and, you know, clean up. How does that contest look, if indeed that's one of the contests running through this contemplation?
Well, I think we'll know more about that in the next couple of days. I mean, because that's what we're hearing is that the votes, the initial votes are going to kind of split along the lines of whether we want an insider in or if we want an outsider in. And I think that's going to be, and we'll, like I said, we'll know that in the next couple of days, because if it's a quick vote, then chances are it's going to be what we're being told is going to be Scola, which is going to be a vote for a move to clean up. And if it if it's Gola, then it's going to be a move maybe in the other direction.
Tom Rees, Father Tom Rees, how do you read the likely direction, cleanup or maybe a defender of the Curia?
Well, the difficulty is we've been talking about reforming the Vatican Curia since the Second Vatican Council. Paul VI wasn't able to do it, John Paul II wasn't able to do it, and Benedict was not able to do it. I think that, you know, there's two issues involved in reforming the Curia. One is simple management. I mean, you know, business and governments have had to deal with financial corruption, leaked documents, and internal divisions. This isn't rocket science. This isn't even theology. This is just good management. And I think the church needs to bring in some people to help it do that. The trouble is, you know, clergy don't learn, you know, they don't get MBAs. They don't learn management, and they need to bring in some experts to help deal with this. But the second is a bigger issue in terms of the Vatican Curia, and that is the question, what do we want it to do? And that is a big, big debate. I, for example, would like to see it much more seen as a civil service in, you know, that is staff to the Pope. Right now, frankly, it looks more like a 17th century court than it does a 19th century bureaucracy. You know, we need to get rid of this whole idea that these bureaucrats should be bishops and cardinals. I mean, that's like having princes and nobles in a court helping the king run the government. This is just an ancient and antiquated way of governing. These people should not be part of the hierarchy. They should be staff to the bishop of Rome, who is the head of the College of Bishops.
You wrote a couple of weeks ago in the National Catholic Reporter that what the church needs is Jesus with an MBA. Is there anybody in that conclave, since they're going to choose from among themselves, who fits that description?
Well, that is certainly the problem. I mean, the job description's impossible. We want a holy man. We want a brilliant theologian. And yet he's supposed to be able to communicate to ordinary people in a way that they understand. And then he's supposed to run a 1.2 billion member organization with thousands of bishops and a central office here in Rome. That's an impossible job. What you really need is someone with certain strengths, and he goes with his strengths, but then he brings in other people to help him with the areas in which he's weak. Cardinal Ratzinger, for example, when I interviewed him before he became Pope, I was asking him about his office, the Congregation for Doctrine of the Faith, and I asked, well, how's it work? How's it run? And his response was, management is not my charism. And I thought of that when he was elected head of this 1.2 billion member organization. Management is not my charism. Well, if it's not your charism, you at least have to have the judgment to hire people to do the job of management for you. And the complaint against Pope Benedict was that he brought in Cardinal Bertone to be the Secretary of State, and many people thought he was not up to the job. And that's where the problems come. I mean, the most important thing any leader does is put the right people in the right jobs to help him do his job.
Kathleen Sprowls-Cummings, how important is this decision this time? I mean, this is a very, very old institution. It's been around and survived a long time. And it's got 1.2 billion followers. Now, on the other hand, we hear a lot about people falling away from the church, certainly in the United States. There's plenty of disenchantment among Catholics in recent years, sex, child abuse scandal, and more, the issue around women and celibacy and more beyond. I saw a USA Today headline the other day saying, Church in Crisis. Is this an especially important? I mean, it's always important, I suppose, for the church. Is this especially important? Is it a crisis moment for the church or not?
I think it is an especially important moment. And I'd just like to echo what Father Tom said about who the next leader hires to do all the work. I think there's a lot of ways, and as in my earlier response, you know, I emphasized that this is not at the level of doctrine, but this is at the level of symbol, or if you want to call it public relations. I think there's many ways that the church at its highest levels of leadership could change its public face to more accurately reflect the diversity of the church, and you can frame that in a lot of ways. And you mentioned women. There is a lot of disconnect between women in this country and particularly young women and the institutional church. And my students here, you know, my young young college students, they've grown up in a culture where all doors are open to them. They never think that there will be doors shut to them because they are women. And that's when they see what Father Tom described as a 17th century court, they find that alienating. I think there are a lot of jobs, there's a lot of talent and a lot of energy of people in this country, women and men, who are not and in the Universal Church, who are not ordained but can do quite a few jobs. And I think the church should do more to harness that energy to avoid what I don't think we can characterize as a crisis yet, but it certainly appears to be heading that way in terms of some of the recent polls.
Women who could do quite a few jobs, but not priest, but not pope under current teaching. Dennis Cote, Father Tom Rees, Kathleen Sprose Cummings, we've got lots of listeners waiting to get in here. Let's go to them. Steve in Windham, Connecticut. Steve, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I read the MBA article. That was I wholeheartedly agree with that. But I live in Connecticut, mm-hmm. and my two guys I want to see is Sean O'Malley, who coincidentally his right hand guy Terrence Donnellan's brother is Tom Donnellan, the national security advisor, or Cardinal Dolan out of New York City. I think these two guys are the best out of my area's picks to change the church. I want to see the church change.
What do you think they could do if it was one of these Americans, and their names are in the mix here, if they were in that seat, you know, they were Pope in Rome, what could an American do that an Italian or a German or an African or a Brazilian could not?
For one thing, they would be able to bring their North American sensibilities and I don't agree with the politics of Cardinal Dolan. I'm more of a Sean O'Malley guy, but I think these two guys, just from sheer living in America, have better sensibilities than some of these folks that are, in the ivory towers.
Well, Steve, I appreciate your call. Dennis Cote, I don't know if it's even possible, but the likelihood, the odds of one of these Americans, Cardinal Boston or Dolan out of New York as Pope, and what about if that were to happen, would they be well positioned to reform in Rome, or because they're not Italian and may not know the inside game so well, would they be poorly positioned?
Well, I'm not sure. When Rachel was talking, DiNardio there from the earlier, she was saying that the Americans have always been kind of blocked from the papacy because of American politics. American is a superpower in the world, an American president is leader of the free world, an American pope. I'm not sure the rest of the world could handle that. Americans aren't real popular outside the United States. In large parts of the developing the world, they're still seen as kind of colonizers or economic exploiters. And so there would be some drawback from that.
What about South American then, or the Ghanaian cardinal, who's seen as being quite a strong contender? And is it Peter Turkson?
The Latin Americans, for sure, are getting a lot of attention, and they, a couple of them have been named as compromise candidates, possibilities, and that might be an easier take. It would be a way to bridge the what we used to call the first world, the developed world, and the third world, and could get probably votes from both sides of that divide.
Tom Rees, what do you think if it were Odio Scherer, the German ancestry, Brazilian cardinal out of São Paulo, does that look like a way to rally support for the church in one of its very biggest continent of population?
Well, certainly if they pick someone that's from outside of Europe, it would have tremendous symbolic value because it would send a signal to the world that this is no longer a European religion, a European church. It's a global church in which more and more of its adherents are in the South.
Tom Rees, hold the thought right there if you'd be good enough. Kathleen Sprose Cummings, Dennis Cote. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the conclave of cardinals in Rome choosing a new pope and what's at stake for the Catholic Church. Dennis Cote is with us. He's editor of the National Catholic Reporter in Rome for the conclave. We asked on Facebook what kind of pope people would like. Ashwin says a woman. Suzanne says someone not Caucasian. Wendell says the Dalai Lama would be perfect. I think he's already got a job. Let's go to John in Melrose, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes, Tom. Great show. I believe that the Pope will definitely be chosen 100% from the Americas for several reasons. One is erosion of the Catholic Church through Pentecostal and Evangelical, especially in South and Central America. And is also is the spiritual center of the Catholic Church is the Americas now. And if they want to stop the erosion and reinforce the church, they have to bring in either Latin Pope or North American Pope. My bet would be about 80% on a Latin and 20% North American. And as far as the Curia is concerned, they'll come in and clean that up. It's not going to be European Pope because the church is dead in Europe. Nobody goes to church anymore there.
John, I appreciate your call. Dennis, what about it? John cites the growth of Pentecostal Christianity in South America and as a reason that the cardinals might choose a pope from South America. Is that seen? It might be seen the other way, though. I mean, if South America is losing Catholic membership, despite its enormous numbers there, to Pentecostal church, does that help or hurt the chances of a cardinal, let's say, from Sao Paulo, just to pick one?
Well, I think the caller's point there brings up an important undercurrent that hasn't been discussed too much in our radio program here, but I think it's been an undercurrent at the conclave meeting or the general congregation meetings, and that is that, you know, in Europe, as he says, the presence of Catholicism has been shrinking. It's been challenged in Latin America. In the United States, what is it, a third of people born and raised Catholics no longer practice the religion. And so that is a real undercurrent to, besides talk of corruption in the Curia and things like that, that someone who can come in and address those aspects of church life is very much, they very much want someone that can do that. And they talk about that as someone who can communicate the gospel message well, or the catchphrase that's being used now, as someone that can approach the new evangelization. And so that's very much what they're looking for.
Tom Reese, how does the church get to that point where that, if that's its goal, in part, to raise a voice of evangelization, when so much of the talk of the church has been about scandal in recent years? How does it get past that to the point where it can raise the trumpet?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, all of these scandals and these problems have distracted us from what is the ultimate mission of the church, which is to preach the gospel of Jesus. We have to figure out how to preach the gospel in a way that is attractive and understandable to people in the 21st century. Pope Benedict actually put it well when he said that Christianity should not be put forth as a series of no's. You know, no, you can't do that. No, 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 like a nagging parent. Rather, it should be a yes to Jesus, a yes to his gospel of love and concern for the poor and for justice and for forming a community of disciples that works together to make the world a better place. I mean, Jesus is very attractive, and his gospel is very attractive, but it's our churchiness that gets in the way of that gospel message often. I think that one of the problems we face is that in the last two papacies, everybody's looked to the Pope for the answers. You know, they elected the smartest man in the room, and they expected him to have all the answers. I think we need a Pope that listens as much as he teaches, that brings together people, smart people, creative people, that, you know, frees up theologians to do the kind of creative work that they need to do to find the answers, to find ways of expressing the gospel today. This is the kind of, you know, we need this kind of freedom and creativity in the church to really respond to these needs.
Catherine Sproul-Cummings, isn't that a structural problem for the church? I mean, after all, John Paul and Benedict, I think, both look to bring more authority, confirm it back at the center of the church. How does the Pope allow that sort of, you know, 100 flowers to bloom after this power has been brought back home? Hasn't the tide gone the other way? Is there a structural problem with that here?
I don't know if it's so much a structural problem as a what's needed is a change in tone and maybe a change in strategy. And I think when we talk about the new evangelization, you know, missionaries historically haven't been very successful unless they speak the language of the people they're trying to persuade. And I think much of the public face of the church has been invested in issues that seem designed to alienate rather than engage the people. And I think that, again, to echo what Father Tom said about a church that says more, with a few more yeses and less noes. And I think that would help reengage American Catholics. And just on that note, to respond to the previous two callers on the question of an American Pope, that's just a fascinating question from the perspective of American Catholic history. And I think, you know, for most of the history of this country, there are cartoons from the 19th century that were published with the American Pope. It is a very threatening thing, this idea that the Pope wanted to somehow take over the United States, and that was a manifestation of anti-Catholicism. It's really astonishing that in just a century, American Catholics are so eager for American Pope. I was struck by your first caller who thinks that this may be the time when these, if you call it the star-spangled ceiling or something, that American candidates may break that. That's just a fascinating question from the perspective of American history.
Does it look like a real possibility to you, given the reservations we've also heard?
I have very limited experience at the Vatican, but I do. I have worked in the Vatican Secret Archives. And on my first trip there, I wasn't there for 20 seconds before I realized that unless I spoke Italian and knew my way around, I wasn't going to get very far. And I think that's just a very small microcosm of the larger problem. And that's something that would concern me about Cardinal Dolan or Cardinal O'Malley, how seriously an American would be taken there. I think that in terms of the American audience, yes, it would be wonderful and seems like the way to solve the problem. But when it comes to actually accomplishing things, I think you need that classic insider-outsider person, and I'm not sure if the American candidates fit the bill in that way.
Let's go to Gilbert calling from Alpine, Texas. Gilbert, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I just want to make it kind of short. I was trying to say that it doesn't really matter where the cardinal comes from. What really matters, I think, is that that they try and have a zero tolerance as to try and strengthen the church. You know, you've got a lot of congregations that are, you know, they're not really satisfied with what's happened with the church. There hasn't been any, I don't want to make sound too harsh, any punishment for the clergy who has been responsible for what has caused a lot of doubt in the church. And so
you're talking zero tolerance of what exactly, Gilbert?
The tolerance of and this is just one aspect, mm-hmm. of the opinion of having I'm getting a little scatterbrained right now.
You're talking about the sexual abuse scandals?
The sexual abuse, you know, if whether it be you or any of the panel that you're speaking, mm-hmm. if it'd been mm-hmm. involved with your brother, your sister, any family member, you definitely would go to jail. And for them to sweep it under the carpet and ship them to a different parish, that's not considered, in my eyes, something that is justified for the people who are trying to follow in the church. If you had a strong church and they saw some effort as to that there is actually being something done, then they'd have a second thought and say, well, you know what, I got to mm-hmm. listen to this.
That would help a lot. Dennis Cote, do you see that coming? Under the next pope, whoever it may be, the church finally moving past this decades-long problem and an almost decade-long scandal now of sexual abuse?
Well, my newspaper, National Catholic Reporter, has been reporting on the issue of sexual abuse of minors by clergy since 1985.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the first time we have seen that issue raised at the highest levels of the Vatican on a number of different platforms. The chief prosecutor in the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith's office, who's overseen the clergy abuse cases over the last 10 years, he's now just been moved as to an auxiliary bishop in Malta, but Auxiliary Bishop Scicluna has said, and I think he's right, that the policy of zero tolerance for this in the church it's in church law now, and it's in church culture. Cardinal George from Chicago said the same thing. And so I think for the first time we're hearing that, and for the first time I can believe it. But the issue that has not been addressed yet is the cover-up by bishops and cardinals covering up the crimes of priests. So zero tolerance for abusers is definitely in the culture now. The tolerance for bishops who would cover that up, though, is still needs to be addressed.
A lot of Catholics watching that issue very closely and maybe with some deeper structural questions about why that emerged in the first place as well. Gilbert, thanks for your call from Alpine, Texas. We're talking about the Conclave of Cardinals in Rome. Let's go to Marjorie in Lowell, Massachusetts. Marjorie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Tom. I have been listening to this conversation about the best man for the job. I've been listening to the job skill set that is required. And I can just feel like the best man for this job is a woman. Her name is Joan Chittister. She has all of these skills, and it's a shame that the church only speaks to less than half of the population. And that's why I'm no longer Catholic. That's my comment. Thank you.
I appreciate your call, Marjorie. Kathleen, you wrote the book, New Women of the Old Faith. What about introduce Joan Chittister to us, and what's our caller suggesting when she raises this name, this woman?
Joan Chittister is a sister who has spoken very publicly, is a revered figure for many American Catholic women. She's spoken about the role of feminism in the church. She says that feminism is not about turning men into women or women into men, but it's allowing all people to become fully human. She has a great following among many women, it sounds like, and really too often I hear comments very similar to one from the caller, that I used to be Catholic but it's because of the women's issue that I was alienating. So Sister Joan Chittister, now there's no way that she will be elected in this conclave, and I think that that what the caller says about some of her qualities are something that people need. What can happen, though, and again, not at the level of doctrine and the level of changing tradition, but at the level of what I said earlier about harnessing the talent of women like Sister Joan and of the many, many women religious and lay women that work for the church, to be able to put them in more public roles. What if in the general congregations that precede a papal election, the cardinals would invite women religious to come and talk to them about some of the problems facing the church? There's a way in which sisters are more in tune with what's happening on the ground all over the world than some of the cardinals might be themselves. I think that that's the kind of thing that could be done, again, without initiating a theological debate over women in ordained ministry, but just a way we can harness these gifts. And unfortunately, in recent years, the Vatican has seemed to have gone out of its way to not invite conversations with the kind of women that Sister Joan appeals to, but designed to alienate them further. And I'm thinking, of course, of the ongoing doctrinal assessment of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, which is something that many American Catholics were very upset by.
Is there something in the year 2013 fundamentally untenable about the fact that it is 115 men in this conclave and that only a man will be chosen? I mean, does that still work, Kathleen?
Increasingly, I know I've been caught a few times in interviews using gender-neutral language when talking about the election, and then I realize I don't have to. This is one case,
right.
Probably the only instance in my public speaking where I don't have to be cautious to do that. Yes, and it's increasingly, you know, historically, and speaking from the American context, for most of this country's history, your average Catholic woman in American society had far more opportunities for education and for meaningful work and for leadership within church structures than outside of them. And for the last five decades, quite the opposite has been true. And American Catholic women are growing up today in a culture where they, if they have a call to meaningful work, to a vocation, they can exercise that in all sorts of ways in secular society. And, of course, don't have that within the church. So it's actually a reversal of what was true for most of American history. And I think that increasingly, young Catholic women are going to find that. I mean, the women that I talk to, my students, they're not themselves, they don't feel called to the priesthood, they're not eager to initiate, as I said, a theological debate, but they are accustomed to a world in which they expect that their gifts and talents will be taken seriously and that their voices will be heard, and increasingly they find themselves disconnected from an institutional church whose public face is all men.
Tom Reese, Father Reese, there are a lot of politics here, we can see that, there are issues around power. It's also a matter of importance at the level of faith for a lot of people. I mean, what is your deepest prayer for the outcome of this conclave as a Catholic?
Well, I think that we realize that the church is facing lots and lots of issues. And not only that, but not just internal issues, but the church needs to be a voice in the world, a prophetic voice in the world. I mean, our whole world is headed towards climate change, which could cost the lives of millions of people. It's what the tragedy is, that the church is so consumed with these scandals and these internal debates that we can't be the voice of Christ, the moral voice in the world today, speaking out for justice, for the poor, and that sort of thing, which is what we ought to be doing. I think that my hope is that we could get a pope who would allow more freedom of discussion in the church so that we can all work together, somebody who can help form consensus in the church, bring us together so that we can solve these issues in the church and then be a positive force in the world.
There is a hope, maybe even a prayer, as the cardinals sit down in Rome. And we're grateful for your thoughts and insights today. Father Tom Rees, Georgetown University's Woodstock Theological Center, thank you so much for being with us today, Tom.
Thank you.
Dennis Cote with the National Catholic Reporter, editor in Rome today. Dennis, thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
And Kathleen Sprose-Cummings at Notre Dame, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.